audiobook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, February 5th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15, hour and 20, hour and 30, however long we go here. Talk about all things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we kick off a new week here on Bang the Book Radio. I don't know how this Monday isn't a national holiday yet, but we'd still be doing the show here anyway, even if it was, but at least all of you out there wouldn't have to be going to work today. And obviously, a lot of people in Philadelphia not going to work today after the Philadelphia Eagles knock off the New England Patriots 41-33 to win Super Bowl 52. We'll chat about that here on today's show with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. We're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about these two teams and some of the decisions that they face going forward. Also, some off-season stuff. And finally, an interesting little note that we're going to chat about on that segment there with Joe. Second half of today's show, Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Our handicapping the hardwood segment, now the focus in the handicapping community, largely goes to college basketball. So we're going to take a look at the overall national championship picture, look at the Colonial Athletic Association, buy low and sell high on a couple teams, and look at some games here for the rest of the week. As you know, over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. I was texting with my boss last night during the game, told him that today is the day that I'll start writing my MLB season win total previews. I've been gathering some information so I can get those out. A little birdie told me that we should have some MLB season win total numbers to talk about this week at one of the brick and mortar sports books in the state of Nevada. So we'll see if that does come to fruition here over the next few days. But that means that we should get some books opening up in Vegas and then also the offshore market here very, very soon. So I'll have a lot of baseball stuff coming your way over at bangthebook.com. But we're also covering the NHL, the NBA, college basketball. We'll have another golf preview here this week. NASCAR is coming back around here shortly. UFC is still going on. Lots of soccer internationally. So tons of things going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure that you sign up for our free contest. Check those out. Apologies to those with the Super Bowl squares. We changed programmers. Our previous programmer didn't leave that set up for us. So I apologize that we were unable to have that for the people that were reaching out on social media about that yesterday. But while you're over at bangthebook.com, check out our matchup data section, sportsbook reviews. You know about the promo code over at DSI, BTV, and the number 25. Tons of stuff going on over there at the website, so make sure that you check it all out. Two guests coming your way here today on this day after the Super Bowl show. We'll start things off with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joe, how's it going today, man?
Going well. The player props went well for the senior bowl, or Super Bowl, and it was a fun game. Horrible defense, but really some good O-line play. I'm glad it was a fun game. But yeah, as we were talking pre-show, just too bad organized football is over and done with for the year.
Yeah, it is, and now we got to focus to that prep period for college football and the NFL, and you know that's an off-season long thing now with the timing of. I mean, Five Dimes has already had up NFL season win totals for 2018 for a couple of weeks now. I threw up a piece over at bangthebook.com today with some Super Bowl 53 futures odds. We know that college football season win totals will be coming out in May, games of the year around that time. There's some week one lines out already. It's crazy. I mean, there really is no off-season for football handicappers, but it will kind of take a little bit of a back seat now as people start to look at the NBA, college basketball, and all that type of thing. But, you know, Joe, last night, for one thing, it was an instant classic. It was a great football game, especially if you like points, if you like excitement, if you played the under, it was not a great football game for you. But, man, I got to say, I'm not an Eagles fan. I'm not particularly a Patriots fan. I really didn't care who won the football game. But I am thrilled for Nick Foles. What a performance that dude put on the absolute biggest stage. He was phenomenal.
Yeah, Nick Foles showed up. Maybe two, three errant-type throws, but everything else, and also helped his receivers. Just Alshon Jeffrey played out of his mind, and maybe a little too out of his mind on that one. It was he's just trying too hard on an extra tip that resulted in that interception in scoring territory. But, yeah, I was looking at it. I had to double-check. If you look at it, Foles was 9 of 15 on third downs, and they were just chunk gains. It helps, though, that this is probably one of the worst New England defenses we've seen, just zero pass rush. And obviously, you know, gone are the days of Chandler Jones and my man from Purdue, Rob Ninkovich, retired now. But even workman-like guys, it's Chris Long being on the opposite side definitely tilted the scales a tad, but they need something other than Trey Flowers, and it really showed. I mean, James Harrison playing all those snaps, that's kind of a head-scratcher because he's just not the same pass rusher. And then the mystery of Malcolm Butler in this game. He played zero defensive snaps. He played, I think, just one. I double-checked on Pro Football Reference. He was one special team snap. That's all Malcolm Butler did, and it's got to be something other than an illness. I know he missed time and practice, and sure, there is some serious flu going around, this and that, but I have a tough time believing there's not something else we just don't know about. And, you know, free agent to be, he's going to be on a different team for sure now. I think that's locked up, and it shows why they were trying to get rid of him. I think just this offseason prior and Brock Gilmore in, this, boy, there's something going on there. But, yeah, tight end showcase and just a lot of bad defense. And the big surprise for me is missed kicks both sides, but the special teams gaffes, the bad snap on the field goal attempt. And I don't blame that on Gostkowski. The snapper basically hit the holder right in the knee, and he's lucky he even got the ball down. So, you know, Belichick, this is a guy that listeners know too well, taught by Parcells. What do we start practice with? We start practice with a hardcore special team session and make sure we don't have these mistakes. And that's the mistakes on special team and the lack of being able to stop Foles on third down. That just, Foles had his way. And yeah, I think we said last, this may be Jeff Hostetler of modern day, because he's going to get paid, and that'll be interesting to see where Foles is at. He's a unique type of guy that he was looking at retirement. Thanks, Jeff Fisher, for almost trashing another perfectly good quarterback that a team could use. But, you know, where he decides to go, maybe he really doesn't have much of an ego, doesn't care about money, and says, I love this coaching staff. I love Doug Peterson. And, you know, I got a lot of brothers in this locker room that I don't want to leave. And it'd be unique if he stayed, man, because they got a good thing going in Philly.
Yeah, they really do. And one of the things that I was talking about yesterday, and I think this is a really good parallel, is that, you know, when Herb Brooks and the 1980 U.S. Olympic men's hockey team upset the Russians in, you know, the Miracle on Ice, Herb Brooks' entire philosophy in that tournament was, you know, we're going to play the Russian style right back at them. We're going to play with creativity. We're going to be the team with the best conditioning in this tournament. You know, we're going to play with a lot of chemistry. And it worked. I mean, they found a way to upset the Russians. Now, of course, you can make a case that, you know, Tretiak probably shouldn't have been pulled after the first period. But, you know, the fact remains that they were the first team to really throw Russia's game back at them. And as I'm watching this game last night, obviously this isn't an upset of that magnitude, and that's not the reason I'm making this comparison, but Philadelphia threw New England's game right back at them. You know, Jacksonville couldn't do it in the AFC Championship game. They lost. Atlanta couldn't do it in the second half of last year's Super Bowl. They lost. Philadelphia did it, man. They're going for fourth downs. They're throwing the football with a lead. They're letting Nick Foles go out there and make plays. That is the reason why we're talking about Philadelphia as the Super Bowl champions today, because Doug Peterson really had some stones in that game. Nick Foles had time to go through his progressions, didn't panic, played a very composed game. It was a lot like the type of game that we're used to seeing from Tom Brady. I love what Philadelphia did last night. I love what Doug Peterson did last night. He went for two at the right time. Didn't get it, but he went for two at the right time. Had the two very ballsy fourth down calls. I love it. Doug Peterson called a great game. Frank Reich called a great game. Obviously, Jim Schwartz probably could have done some things differently since his defense gave up 613 yards. But, man, Doug Peterson is a star as far as I'm concerned. That was one hell of a game plan. Utmost confidence in Nick Foles, and it paid off. And I love that they, you know, basically did to the Patriots what the Patriots do to everybody else. And that's why we're talking about an Eagles win today.
Yeah, I like that comparison. To the hockey, that great upset. It was conditioning. It was creativity and coaching. And and aggressiveness. And that's exactly what we saw here. It's I think the creativity with building this roster, Howie Roseman, look at the free agency, Blunt, Ajayi, bringing in Jeffrey last year, but Jernigan this year, a lot of different pieces, and they've all basically paid off in spades. And then Philly using these analytics, not just in scouting, but also in play calling. There's a reason they are so aggressive on fourth down, and they're successful in fourth down, which also helps. But and surrounding your quarterback with all these athletes, not just the running backs, but those wide receivers. Jeffrey, as we mentioned, but Torrey Smith made some big plays. Aguilar didn't have his greatest game by any means, but it's just all those athletes running around, the difference in style of play, and that's looking like the future of Lookout Chicago. I mean, you're probably going to have a very similar offense to this, and the aggression, just going for it. It's just kind of smell to Bruce Arians, a little no risk it, no biscuit. We're just going out. Threes aren't going to win it. You don't win games with field goals against Tom Brady, and they won with that. So, yeah, credit to them. And I think we saw just a lot of future head coaches in this game, obviously with the Patriots' assistance, but look out for Frank Reich in the future. Look out for Jim Schwartz. I'm shocked Jim Schwartz isn't being talked about for some of these jobs. And, hey, if the Colts get stiff-armed by Josh McDaniels, Jimmy Schwartz would be a wonderful alternative, I think. That's just me talking. But even, what is it, DeFilippo is out. I mean, I think this is just even both sides, well-coached game. And then the Philly, what a job they've done building that team.
And the big play that stands out to me, and everyone wants to talk about the Nick Foles touchdown catch, and that was a thing of beauty. I loved seeing that type of play. But the fourth down in the fourth quarter with about 5.5 minutes left, they're on their own 45-yard line. And you know if you give the ball back to Tom Brady, you're probably losing this game. Just the way that the second half had gone, the way that things had transpired so far, you know, that was just such a huge moment there for Philadelphia. You know, you don't want to put it on your defense in a game where we saw over 1,100 yards, and you run a pick play on fourth and one, and it's a thing of beauty because – if they call it, you kick it away and you play defense. If they don't call it, you're getting a first down to Zach Ertz. That's exactly what happened. You know, the officials really let them play in this game. And quite frankly, I think the officials called a really good game. I know we talk about, you know, officiating in all the major sports now. We talk about not knowing what the hell is a catch or anything like that. I thought the officials were really good in this game. They largely let the teams play. There were a couple of PI calls that probably could have been made. But, you know, there are a couple of PI calls in every game that could have been made. But you take your chances there. You run that pick play. You dare the officials to call it in such a huge spot in the fourth quarter. They didn't do it. Philadelphia gets the first down, eventually winds up scoring the game-winning touchdown. I love it. I mean, that's exactly what you should do if you're Doug Peterson in that spot. And, you know, then you get to play on defense. The one play that's made on defense in this game winds up being the one that seals the game. So just an instant classic. And, you know, I mean, it's a shame what some of the Eagles fans did after the game in terms of destroying the city and looting and all that type of thing. But you know, congratulations to Philadelphia fans who've waited a very, very long time for this to happen. Like I said, I don't have any skin in the game, but when you come from a city like Cleveland, like I do, and we're used to not winning a damn thing, you know, kudos to or congratulations there to the Eagles fans for that. But Joe, you mentioned the Malcolm Butler thing, and I think it's a good transition here into looking at these two teams for the offseason. And we'll start with New England, because now you've got 40-year-old Tom Brady, who threw for over 500 yards, didn't look particularly good in the first half of this game, some wobblers, underthrew some guys. Second half, he looked like the Tom Brady that you would expect him to be. But they've got some personnel decisions that they have to make here. Now you've got Gronkowski kind of wondering about his future a little bit, which is obviously something that could have long-ranging impacts for New England. Malcolm Butler probably going to be gone now at this point. I think him not playing yesterday, seals that fate, and that's a whole other discussion for another day. You know, when you give up 530-something yards and you're getting carved up on deep balls, Malcolm Butler must have really did something wrong to not wind up playing in this game, and we'll see if that eventually comes to light here. But what do you think long-term here about the Patriots? I mean, you know, they let Jimmy Garoppolo go to San Francisco, go in the first round and maybe try to get an understudy for Tom Brady? Do they try to position themselves for life after Tom Brady? What do you think they do here over these next few months?
got to get a new coaching staff. That's first off. And the biggest question in my mind is Dante Scarnecchia, offensive line coach, who retired, three seasons ago, and then came back last 2 years. It showed up, too. I mean, it's just such a magic touch he has, and he's had over the years for them. This guy survived coaching staffs, changeovers, multiple. You know, that's a little trivia for you. Ron Meyer, the late Ron Meyer, who just passed away, SMU coach, Patriots coach, coached here in Indianapolis for the Colts, he brought Scarnecchia over to New England originally, and he's been there ever since. Like, what an institution. So I think that's first off on Belichick's list. He's got to convince Dante to come back because he needs to transition to a new offensive coordinator, because McDaniels, I got to think, is just the press conference should be soon, is what I assume. So you're looking at Chad O'Shea, the wide receivers coach, is the likely candidate, I'd have to think. And then the special teams coach, maybe Joe Judge gets moved up. I don't know what they do on defense. I'm not as worried about defense as it offense. You know, you're looking at a quarterback who is basically a prodigy, a rocket scientist level kind of offensive mind, and you're going to throw a newbie at him. That's quite the drop off. And so, yeah, coaching first off, and then a roster makeup. It's pass rush. They got to get an edge. They got to find somebody, and they're not going to get Bradley Chubb. They're going to have to maybe they look in their backyard at Boston College, at Harold Landry. They need some speed at linebacker. I mean, well, we've talked about this. If you want to drink a game on this podcast, it's coverage linebackers. There's a freaking epidemic in the league, and they don't have anybody that can run. And Kyle Van Noy's Loft, and L-O-F-T, if you want to make up those acronyms, it's just showed up. And Landon Roberts is just so limited in space, too. Even Dante Hightower comes back. He's just a downhill guy that doesn't really have lateral movement. So they have to get a linebacker that can run. They need edge. They just need team speed in general on defense, and that's a problem. Defensive tackle, they need a little bit more size and strength up front. Like Alan Branch and that knee injury, that was evident. Malcolm Brown's a great player, but he needs help in the inside. I think they're a little more prepared at corner for that transition of Butler, and they could make up for it in free agency. They teach that position so well, but one thing we all know, you just can't teach speed. So that's where I'd look, not only in the draft but free agency. They got to address that, and then quarterbacks also looming. I mean, Brian Hoyer's all well and good until the stuff hits the fan, and then Hoyer's not looking so smart. I mean, obviously losing Garoppolo hurts, but they've got to get a future for a 41-year-old Tom Brady. I mean, that's this good strong quarterback draft, so maybe they make a splash that way. But if I'm a Patriots fan or supporter, I'm hoping for an impact pass rusher, because that's what they lack. All due respect to Trey Flowers, he is a good player, but is he a game changer that flips the light switch on and off? I just can't say that he is, and that's really what they need. They need to hit lightning in a bottle with a pass rush to really maximize the end of this window of Belichick Brady.
I think it's so interesting because they didn't even try to rush Nick Foles yesterday. They tried to drop back in coverage and sort of play it that way. And Foles just went through his progressions and threw some balls to the sideline that, you know, his guys just made great plays on. I sort of wonder, you know, for New England here, I mean, in this RPO generation, is that pass rusher such a big deal for them, or should they focus more on that coverage linebacker? They've got some pretty decent safety play here. I mean, Patrick Chung had a really good game in this one, even though he was banged up a couple of times. I'm just sort of, you know, unsure as to, you know, the current state of the NFL, the current state of NFL offenses. You know, teams get the ball out so quick now. A lot of teams like to do that New England type of offense, or, you know, you got a lot of quick slants, quick outs, all these quick throws. You don't have a whole lot of time to get in there and rush the quarterback as much as you used to. And as teams tend to transition in that direction, you know, does New England focus on a pass rusher? Does New England focus on a linebacker that can actually chase somebody? Do you get kind of a hybrid defensive end where he can rush but can also cover on some of those, you know, shorter routes to tight ends, things, the angle routes to running backs? I don't know. I mean, I, you know, like we've talked about here, The offensive line play in the NFL is not great. Coverage from the linebackers is not great. You know, we don't have a ton. We're starting to come around to more teams running the football a little bit now with all these RPOs. But I feel like New England's kind of in no man's land a little bit with that defense, where they're not really prepared for traditional offenses, not really prepared for, you know, the new age of offenses. Then you look at the fact that this is a team that was, you know, a one possession game away from winning another Super Bowl. They went 13-3 in the regular season. All these problems that we seem to be talking about with New England, and yet none of them really seem to matter when it comes to crunch time. So is Tom Brady just that much of an elixir for this team, or is there maybe something that, you know, we are overlooking a little bit?
Oh no, he's a team deodorant. There's no question in that. Like, he is one of those greats that he just makes up for so many more blemishes. You just don't notice all the scratches, the dings, the holes. It's, you know, that's what he does for him. I mean, he had one of his better games. I mean, there was just some amazing throws with pressure in his face, with a guy just nailing him in the gut, throwing dimes. Can't take anything away from Brady. It's just you can't have a defense giving up what they can. And I think their biggest problem is that, like you said, they don't. They're reacting. They don't dictate anything. There's no forced scenario that they put in front of a team and saying, "Well, this side's shut off," or you know, we have that entire blanket on the back half. You're gonna have to just take whatever check down, whatever scramble you're gonna be able to do. And they can't take anything away up front. They can't shut down anyone on the side. I mean, Gilmore actually, it was fun to watch him battle with Alshon Jeffrey, but I'd have to say Alshon Jeffrey won that battle on the whole game there, just with those splash catches. And once again, were it not for that one mistake, I mean, he was just phenomenal. So I think that's their problem right now. They don't have any difference makers. So maybe it is a safety. They could certainly could use more, but it's, I'll say it again, coverage backer, even converting a safety. That's one of the themes, I think, of the future of the NFL. It's why you've seen some of these defense have success, is that, well, the converted safeties in for the Rams, Ogletree and the Alabama kid, Barron, I believe, both of those guys, safeties in college. You know, there's a reason the Chargers had – that's a team that's going to need linebackers too. They had Hayes Pollard from USC, another converted safety, just running out there. I think this may be where New England needs to look and say, be honest with themselves, and that's where you can expect – them to make changes there. Belichick's he's got to revamp this that side of the ball completely. So I'd have to think that's the linebacker position is really going to be one that's the first to kind of hit the woodshed and then work from the defensive line from there. Like I said, they got a good start with Flowers, but you need two guys to rush. And if they're going to play the way they played in the Super Bowl and leave coverage back there, rush with four, you better have some talent with four, and they don't have it right now.
Nick Foles, Case Keenum, Blake Bortles. Those were three of the four remaining quarterbacks in the NFL playoffs this year. And obviously we saw Nick Foles come out and have a career day in the Super Bowl. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit unfair to lump him there in that group. But again, the fact remains, I mean, up until week 15 or so, Nick Foles was a backup quarterback to a second year guy in Carson Wentz. Case Keenum, first time being a full-time starter with Sam Bradford hurt and also Teddy Bridgewater hurt. And then Blake Bortles, I mean, Jacksonville just had an elite-level defense. And you know what? He did what he had to do in the red zone, made enough plays. But, you know, you've got Tom Brady and then three guys, basically. So it kind of makes you wonder, as we look ahead to this offseason here, you know, there's all the talk about the quarterback-heavy draft and, you know, where's Kirk Cousins going to go? Does Nick Foles end up getting traded? You know, is Nick Foles even an every week starter in the NFL? You know, that performance aside last night, you know, is he really a guy that you want to go with for 16 games plus the possibility of the playoffs? I don't really know, but curious how we look at these playoffs going forward. Because, as I said, you've got Foles, Keenum, and Bortles as three of your last four left standing. So, you know, in the NFL, do you really need that elite quarterback? Do you just want to surround somebody that's competent at the position with a lot of skill position talent? You know, if you've got somebody competent at the position, you got a good defense, you got a shot. I'm kind of curious to see how teams, you know, value and evaluate the quarterback position now, not just this offseason, but going forward. And I think this offseason is a pretty good test case with all the guys that are available in the first round of the draft. You know, we even see Kansas City taking away the game manager type guy in Alex Smith. They sent him to Washington. They're going to go with Pat Mahomes, who, you know, maybe more upside, maybe more arm talent, but certainly nowhere near as polished. I'm just curious, you know, what the future of the quarterback position looks like this offseason and beyond, given what we've seen here this year.
Well, I think it's the common thread there with all those three, maybe not the most talented. And actually, if you look at all those three, they would have been free agents, all three of them, were it not for Bortles and this surgery he's got. So they can't cut him from the roster and save the 19 mil. But he also played well, which eases the decision. But the common thread with Foles, Keenum, and Bortles is you're looking at veterans. Veterans combined with great coaching. I think that's that where you can expect some results from guys like that with Bortles and Doug Marrone. I think that Doug Marrone, really what he did for Jacksonville, that's the great coaching job there. We know about Mike Zimmer and the Minnesota staff, and then obviously with Foles, but those are great coaching staff surrounding capable veterans, and I stand by it. You know, that Chris Chandler that I love to belt out every time, I'll keep doing it. He claims he just really didn't even understand the quarterback position fully and couldn't execute things to the 100th degree until he turned 30 or more. And that's unfortunately, like, you're either going to be out of the league if you don't play well early these days with the salary being the way it is, or if you last till 30, your body may deteriorate. So it's that's what makes QB so difficult, just not only to survive that long, but to play well early. It's there's so much pressure on getting in there early and being just instant coffee these days. Quarterback position just tough to learn. And what is Foles, like 29, 30 almost? I don't know. Bortles is probably the youngest of that bunch. But, yeah, of those three that made the playoffs, I think it's just surrounded by great rosters. But also they're just – they've been in the league. They've got – they've earned their stripes, taken their licks, and they're still standing. And that's what you got to give those guys like Keenum and Bortles credit for. It's they kept getting back up, which you can't say that for all those QBs in the league.
No, and what kind of got me on this thought process is that, you know, at the Super Bowl party I was at last night, a lot of people were talking about the Cleveland Browns and the situation that they face. You know, will they give $30 million to Kirk Cousins because they have all that cap space? And it just kind of got me to thinking. I mean, Kirk Cousins is an above-average quarterback in the NFL, and no one's going to dispute that point. But it almost feels to me like if you just surround a team with two or three backs that can catch, you know, a tight end that's a good matchup guy, and then guys at wide receiver that can catch the football, you know, you don't need big play 40-yard per catch types of guys. You just need dudes that can run a route and catch the damn ball. And if you're Cleveland, you know, you've got that matchup tight end in David Njoku. You've got Josh Gordon, who's a guy that can catch the football, can stretch the field a little bit. You've got Duke Johnson, who's a very versatile running back. You've got a little bit of a bruiser in Crowell who can, you know, catch the football a little bit if he has to. So when you're a really bad team in the NFL and you're trying to build this thing up, sure, you want a franchise quarterback because everybody does. But to me, I think we're kind of in an era in the NFL where Brady's over 40. He's kind of on the toward the backside of his career, despite yesterday's 500-yard performance. Ben Roethlisberger talking about possibly retiring, a guy that, you know, maybe has just had enough with the game. Drew Brees, there's not a whole lot of tread left on those tires. So we're kind of getting into a situation here where who is an elite quarterback in the NFL? Russell Wilson, maybe? I mean, do you throw that label on him? You know, so I think we're kind of getting to a point where it's going to be a bunch of average to above average quarterbacks, and you want to surround them with as much skill position talent as possible. And obviously the pay scale for the quarterback position is kind of skewed anyway. But I'm just curious to see how these really bad teams, especially all these teams that need quarterbacks, the Jets, the Browns, you know, Indianapolis, if Andrew Luck's not going to be able to come back and be good, Denver needs a quarterback, the Giants need somebody after Eli. You know, we'll see if Mitch Trubisky is the guy for the Bears. Is Jameis Winston the guy for the Buccaneers? You know, what does Arizona do at the quarterback position? There are a lot of questions here. But I think that, you know, maybe what we see with what happened in the playoffs is you can get by with a guy that's average to above average if they're surrounded by a ton of talent or if you've got an elite level defense. So I'll be really interested to see how skill position players are valued over the next few seasons, because like I said, I think it's almost more about the supporting cast, the play design, the scheme than it is about the guy that's actually taking the snaps.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, the scheme in this example for Philly, I think it developing their roster and just filling it out with players that have multi-ability, you know, complete versatile. They're only, like, what we would call one-tool player is probably Blount, even though Blount had another guy that just out of the woodwork had a great game, ended up getting the touchdown for that prop. But, hey, he is the only guy that doesn't bring a lot of different things to the table, whereas all those running backs do. All those wide receivers are great after the catch. They're jump ball guys. They can run routes. And then we all know about Ertz, but then Trey Burton, this is a guy option QB has in his history. Who knows, if he was at a different school, he may have been doing a lot more than tight end if he didn't end up at Florida. So I think that once that backup comes in, it's a lot easier, especially with all these RPOs. They're really gearing it towards college. But I think, like you mentioned, if a lot more teams embrace this, the league goes that way, we may see a lot more of this. And the thing you hit on that I have to agree with, it's just there's going to be changeover coming. We've been living off these great veterans for a while, and Drew Brees is going to hang them up eventually here. Tom Brady, but what about the class of Roethlisberger, Manning, and Rivers, all the same year drafted? That ends near. I'm sorry. I think Rivers may be the one that hangs on the longest. I mean, that's a lot of mouth to feed with all those children he has. But, I mean, either way, though, those guys are eventually going to be hanging them up. So, and Rodgers, how long does he last in Green Bay? I mean, that's, if you ask me who's still elite after those guys are gone, it's Rodgers. It's, I like Wentz. I like Newton. I think Garoppolo's on his way, and Wilson. But, that's going to be the new era of top-tier, I guess, quarterbacks. But I think, big changeover coming. And some of these veterans, like the guys we mentioned, you'll be able to take advantage just off a team change and go into a better roster, go into a better environment, and probably a better coaching staff in some situations. You never know.
Shame on me for forgetting Mr. Danica Patrick there, Aaron Rodgers. I can't believe that that his name slipped my mind there during that quarterback discussion of who truly is an elite guy, and he certainly does fit the bill. All right, so here's the last thing I want to ask you, Joe, and we'll touch base with you again here over the offseason a few times. I'm sure we'll do it as we get closer to the draft specifically. But one of the things that I noticed, and I wrote up a quick piece, as I mentioned, with some Super Bowl 53 futures odds over at bangthebook.com. Since 2003, every season except for 2014 has had a team go from worst in its division to first in its division. So as we look ahead to 2018 here, those teams are the Jets, Browns, Texans, Broncos, Giants, Bears, Buccaneers, and 49ers. Now, the 49ers out there at five dimes right now are 18-1 to win the Super Bowl. So they're the easy choice here, obviously, to be the type of team to go from worst to first. Obviously, a much different dynamic with Jimmy Garoppolo. You and I love Kyle Shanahan, to harken back to that Bang the Book radio drinking game that we like to play. So I'm going to take the easy one away from you. You can give some thoughts on the 49ers here because I know you have some. But of those other seven teams, do any of them have a shot to actually win their respective divisions next year?
Did you list the Texans?
I did.
Oh, yeah, that I'd have to say. I mean, that's just without Deshaun Watson was the real issue. But also, what about J.J. Watt coming back? If Clowney's there, Watts wrecking stuff, the both of them together. Sure, they lose Mike Vrabel, but, I mean, Romeo Crennel, Mike Vrabel, they'll find someone to coach these guys up. They need help in the back half and the secondary. They can't stop a lot of teams, but you bring Will Fuller back from injury. Nuke Hopkins is still, I mean, at the position. Maybe Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, but if my consolation prize is the best receiver is Nuke Hopkins, I'm happy. And it all hinges, of course, on Watson. But I think if you're really taking, they've probably got really good odds to make it to the Super Bowl. A lot of bad defenses in the AFC, I'll just say it. I mean, even Denver now slipping up, not looking like what they were. So I think they could get out of their defense. They're looking at Jacksonville. I mean, that is it, just getting over that hump. But I think they could score enough points just to survive, and that's a team I mean, obviously my favorite, the 49ers. Now, I could go ad nauseum on them, but I would like Houston's chances a lot just because there's, I think, some faux teams in the division. We've kind of voiced our dislike for the Titans in the past, so maybe they get it together with Vrabel going over there, and that's definitely an interesting spin on their matchups. You know, Vrabel's going to know everything about that offensive staff, so he'll have a little leg up there. But yeah, I like Houston's chances a lot. Bill O'Brien, they keep him in here. They had a good thing going last year. I think that offense could be even better year two of Watson.
Yeah, it's just so fascinating. And actually, one of the teams I did mention in that article that I do like is Tennessee, because, you know, we talked about it already when it comes to the Eagles and Doug Peterson and Frank Reich here. You know, you've got a veteran defensive coordinator in Dean Pease, which is a coup of a hire for the Titans. I don't know how they were able to pull that off. I thought he wanted to retire, but then they wind up bringing him in. Matt LaFleur did a phenomenal job as Sean McVay's right-hand man with that offense, with the Rams. And then Vrabel, you know, going to be a fiery guy, a defensive-minded guy as your head coach. You know, I think the Titans are set up in an interesting way here, because I think LaFleur can really put something together to maximize the skill set of Marcus Mariota. So Tennessee is an interesting team for me. You know, look, with the 49ers, here's the thing. I think they're really overrated right now, really overvalued. Yeah, they won five straight. Garoppolo looked fantastic. But for them to be 18-1 to win Super Bowl 53 is kind of crazy to me. I mean, the Rams, who just went 11-5, obviously they were one and done in the playoffs, but they're plus 1750 at five dimes. I don't see those two teams, and obviously, you know, futures odds are different, and there's going to be a little bit more exposure on the 49ers with how they finished up the year. But those two teams are not on equal footing to me right now. San Francisco's got to figure a lot of things out on defense first, probably want to get some more talent around Garoppolo. I love Kyle Shanahan, but they don't feel like they're there yet to me. I don't know. I think next year may be the year that where we don't see a team go from worst to first in this division, just because of the way that things are set up with how top-heavy the NFL is right now.
No, I'd agree they'd have to have a big turnaround on defense. And, you know, I read a lot of mock drafts out there, and obviously, yes, we want to surround Jimmy Garoppolo with talent. Let's draft him an offensive tackle. Let's draft a wide receiver. That cornerback room is terrible right now for the 49ers. Like that's why wide receivers just had their way with them at certain points in the season. So I think they need to add there. They've got a lot of first-rounders, though, on the defensive line. Buckner, Armstead from Oregon, and Solomon Thomas, the kid they just took out of Stanford, and then Reuben Foster still flying around. So I think, you know, front seven's in good shape. I would just look, you know, the improvement from year one to year two, just the you're going to have that full install in the off season, and then that division or that conference rather around them, though. You're right. The Rams, they're top dog, and those odds are like probably a little skewed. But you gotta think things are changing for Seattle, Arizona now without Arians, changing a quarterback where they're at. I think it's a winnable conference, and still I love those Super Bowl odds. I'm you know me and my Jimmy G love. I can't get enough, so I'm still backing them. But you do bring up a good point about the Rams. I mean, there's nothing wrong or nothing's changing basically. They have to re-sign LaMarcus Joyner, I think, is their biggest off-season checklist. So no, you cannot forget about Los Angeles.
Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. Joe, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, standard stuff. We're getting ready for the combine. The RIC is going to be in Indianapolis, so look out for team one, team two of NFL Draft Bible Live downtown Indy. And then Stay tuned here on BTR. Right after you're done, we're going to be doing a podcast actually at 12, but miss the live stream, you can catch it archived. We're going to do a live mock draft. So check us out on here on Blog Talk. We do a podcast as well, and then iTunes, and of course at NFLDraftBible.com.
And you can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett and at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, appreciate your time throughout the season here, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for filling in for some of those super contest segments as well. It really means a lot. You've shared a lot of great insight with our listeners here, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
All right, you got it.
Great stuff there today with Joe Everett from NFL Draft Bible. And, again, lots of things to look forward to here as we start to turn an eye toward the 2018 NFL season. Well, lots of things to look forward to in the world of college basketball as well. We're going to do our handicapping the hardwood segment here with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Pretty good, man. How about yourself?
Doing well. You know what? I got more energy than I figured I would have here today. I don't know if it's because I did pretty well with the props or because the game was so exciting or because I'm starting a lot of baseball writing here this week, but I don't know. I feel chipper today.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say I feel really chipper, but I'm, you know, looking forward to another new week and coming off a good day on Sunday, good week again. So always a positive thing to start the week out with, you know, a good outlook.
Well, it's a positive thing here to start the week out with handicapping the hardwood as well. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, really by and large now, the industry becomes about college basketball. You have people that play the NBA and the NHL every day. The NBA is a really tough nut to crack. It's a very, very hard handicap. You know, we don't have as many guys sitting out this year as we've had in past years because they've added some off days to the schedule. But, you know, we've had multiple instances of really bad teams just throwing up awful fourth quarters here lately as their tanking is on. We've got, you know, the Cavs in free fall mode, it seems. We've got, you know, the trade deadline and trade rumors and all that going around the NBA. So the NBA is a hard handicap, and there aren't a whole lot of people that are all that invested in NHL handicapping. So it's all about college basketball now, and it's a good time for us to take a look at the national picture overall, look at some of those national championship futures, things of that sort, because we're about a month and 10 days or so away from the start of March Madness.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe that it's that soon. And like you say, college basketball certainly takes the center stage now. You know, people look forward to March Madness. That's a huge week. Conference tournaments, another great week. And, you know, when you talk about conference tournaments, there are some of those that start like the last day of February. So we're really pushing, you know, toward the end of the season here. It's good to think about, you know, who's the national title favorites. Also good to think about the fact that, you know, this is a good time of the year. If you haven't been betting college basketball, to be pretty careful because things are a lot different than they were the last time you saw college basketball, if it was last year when you paid attention. So, you know, be real careful. Don't try to be a hero if that's the case. But, you know, I think that at this point in the college basketball season, what we've really figured out is that there's a lot of parity in college basketball. I know that that's very commonly said, but certainly true. I think there's three teams that have been by far the most consistent now this year: Villanova, Virginia, and Purdue. The interesting thing to me about this is two of those three teams have really been bad in postseasons here in the recent past, in Virginia and Purdue. And really, Villanova has had several early outs as well and then had a title a couple of years ago, sandwiched in the middle, obviously. I'm looking forward to seeing how those teams do in the postseason this year. I think there's a lot of pressure on a team like Virginia. You know, Virginia's played extremely well this year. Their defense is so good. But the types of outs that they've had in the NCAA tournament, and I think there's a little bit of extra pressure on a team like that. And I have to say I'm rooting for them. I like Tony Bennett. I think he does a great job with this team. It's hard to believe, too, Virginia wasn't even ranked in the top 25 before the season, which – I mean, they should have been ranked in the top 25 before the season, but the fact that they were unranked in the preseason and now they're doing what they're doing is really pretty amazing.
I try not to dwell on things too much from a handicapping standpoint in terms of if I miss a line or if I miss a price or something like that. I'm still mad at myself for not getting Virginia at 50-1. I think I saw it. I don't remember if it was Bet Online or Five Dimes, but you know, they were 50-1 coming into the season, and that price blew my mind. Didn't take it, and now obviously it would be, you know, one that would set up really nicely. But I think the one key difference about Virginia here this year is you know, they're still elite defensively, and they're always going to be with that Tony Bennett system. But this year, they're actually a top 35 offense per KenPom offensively. I just realized I double said that. But in any event, you know, they actually have a competent offense here this year, which is something that they really haven't had too much with these previous Bennett teams that have been really good defensively. Maybe that's the deciding factor here, because the problem for them once they get to the NCAA tournament is they're playing games with such a limited number of possessions that if they have one really bad shooting performance, they're done. And as good as that defense is, you know, it's going to be a low scoring game. You know, in a lot of instances when they play decent teams, they'll be pretty close games. And if you can't score, it almost doesn't matter how good your defense is once you get to the NCAA tournament, because you don't have that margin for error. So at least this year, their offense is a little bit better.
Yeah, their offense is certainly better than it was last year. A couple of years ago, they had a pretty good offense. Their defense wasn't as good as they are right now, though. So, you know, they're easily first in the country in defensive efficiency. I believe Cincinnati second. And, you know, this Virginia team, I think they'll do well in the postseason, but I admit to being a little bit nervous, you know, backing them to win it all. I think that, like you said, when you play that slow, that few of possessions, it lends itself to closer games, you know, and if you're missing shots and even if you have a bad half or bad three-fourths of the game, it's hard to recover from that. You know, if you're playing a quicker possession game, you know, it's easier to pull away. You know, you're going to have a close game a lot when it's lower scoring. And Virginia has been bitten several times by this. We'll see what happens this year. Purdue, the same way. You know, Matt Painter, I think he's a good coach. I wouldn't put him in the elite category. But Purdue has really not had much success in the postseason. And now you have a Purdue team that's 23-2. I mean, I don't think anybody saw this coming. They lost consecutive games to Tennessee and Western Kentucky on November 22nd and 23rd, and they haven't lost another game all year. I think this is a case where I don't think the Big Ten as a whole is as good as I thought it was going to be, and as good as most people thought it was going to be. I think that you know, there are some good teams at the top of the Big Ten, but some of those, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams aren't as good as I thought they were going to be. And you know, Purdue's taking advantage of that. Purdue has some tough games coming up here. They play Ohio State at home. You know, they'll be favored by a good amount in that one. Then they play at Michigan State. So certainly, you know, some chances that they could get upset or could lose coming up soon. But I think for Purdue, the key really is their defense going to be as good as they've been in some of these big games this year? Purdue's offense is third in offensive efficiency in the country. Purdue is trying to play quickly. They're shooting 43% from three-point range. A couple of years ago, you may remember that Purdue had these good big guys, and they had no backcourt. They couldn't shoot the ball from three-point range. That's completely changed now. You know, you're shooting 42.8% from three-point range, second best in the country. I think Purdue is certainly a very good team, but again, I do think there's some question marks around them. Although, having said that, you know, I feel like there are a decent amount of question marks about every team this year. Villanova would be my, you know, certainly most likely to win it at this point. Villanova's offensive efficiency is just off the charts, almost 1.3 points per possession. They're always going to be a good defense. They're not as good this year as they've been some of the past years, but I feel like Villanova is the safest bet right now, but really it's wide open.
Yeah, it certainly does seem like it is very wide open. And I mean, we'll just have to kind of follow along here a little bit and see if the picture kind of clears itself up a little bit. But, you know, we'll talk a little bit more next week about some of the teams that may have some futures value that are out there. I know we like to throw some in as we kind of get them throughout the season here. And, you know, we're getting to that point now where people are going to start looking at bracketology. They're going to start looking at, you know, some of the possible seeds for some of these teams, and maybe you can find some value out there in the futures market as a result. But, you know, one of the things that we do kind of pride ourselves on here during the Handicapping the Hardwood segment of the show is that we like to dig into some of those under the radar types of conferences, the not even just the mid majors, but the low majors as well. We're going to talk about one here today, the Colonial Athletic Association. This one comes from a listener question that you got. What's the question? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, listener Matt was wanting to know about the CAA and just some teams that I thought might be underrated and overrated at this point in the season. First of all, I like the CAA. I think it's a good conference, kind of underrated. Probably not as good as it was a few years ago, but you know, there's a lot of different teams in there than there used to be. I think this is a conference that's pretty wide open. The teams that I would look at right now as underrated would be Elon and Towson. Both of these two teams really experienced. Elon second in minutes continuity in the country, and Towson is 20th. So they're playing a lot of the same guys they did last year. I think both of these teams have been a little bit underachieving so far this year, but they have several games left in the regular season. Towson plays good defense. Elon's decent on defense as well. These two teams are a little bit less reliant on jump shots than most teams in this conference. Elon does take a lot of threes, so you could argue that they're pretty reliant on jump shots. Elon does a really good job taking care of the basketball. You know, this is a conference where I feel like a lot of teams rely on jump shots. William & Mary really stands out. Northeastern is one that does as well, although Northeastern is playing better defense this year. Hofstra, an offense that is really efficient, a defense that's bad. I like the teams that don't rely on jump shots as much, and I like the veteran teams. I think they can make a push this time of the year. They have a lot of players on both of these teams that, you know, this is going to be it for them. So I think in February and then in conference tournament time, I look for these teams to be teams that we look to back and look for futures value on, because I think the way they've played so far this year is not quite indicative of what they can be.
Well, and this is such an interesting conference because, I mean, we've had some teams that have moved on from this league. We had Old Dominion and VCU that used to be in here. Old Dominion, obviously, now Conference USA. VCU has also moved on. But UNC Wilmington has been the class of this conference here the last 2 years. They've taken down the conference tournament, which is at North Charleston Coliseum in North Charleston, South Carolina. So it's kind of a neutral site in that Charleston doesn't actually play there, but the tournament is in their backyard. So, you know, we've got this UNC Wilmington team 4-8 in conference play, 7-17 overall. A little bit of a changing of the guard here in this league.
Yeah, UNC Wilmington has a lot of new players this year. They're 301st in minutes continuity in the country. So a lot of new faces, a new coaching staff. You know, it was Kevin Keats was a really good coach there, and he's done a tremendous job at NC State. So they're certainly missing him, and then obviously getting that many new faces is difficult as well. You know, that's a team that I think Wilmington's been improved here of late, and they've lost some games in overtime of late. But, you know, they're certainly not the team that they have been in the past. I wouldn't look for them to make a good run this year. I think that, you know, they're a couple years away from being really good again. I think College of Charleston's one of those teams that, you know, having the tournament that close to them certainly benefits them. Charleston's a good defense, a very good defense. They weren't healthy earlier in the season. You could certainly argue that Charleston's underrated still, but, you know, being tops in the league right now, I try to stay away from them. It's an underrated team, but I do like them, certainly. And I think overrated right now, Drexel. You know, Drexel's pulled several upsets here of late. This is still a team allowing 1.16 points per possession in the league. They have almost no bench at all. Starters play a ton of minutes here. I think Drexel has a really tough stretch of games coming up here. Drexel would be a team I'd look to go against here coming up because I feel like they've pulled off a lot of really close victories here by shooting the ball really well. They're still not guarding anybody very well at all. And I think this Drexel team has kind of peaked and you know, if there's some recency bias here, I think we could get some value going against them.
Well, as you look at the CAA in terms of KenPom's ratings, the top team in this league, Northeastern, but they're 118th. So as far as this league goes relative to some of the other low majors, I mean, is this one pretty far down the totem pole?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those conferences. I think KenPom rates them 16th best. So, I mean, the CAA used to be better than it is now. There's no doubt about that. You know, they lost some good teams. I think they were, you know, 12th or 13th in KenPom's conference rankings before. It's hard when you lose your best teams, you know, multiple times, VCU, George Mason, Old Dominion. You know, this is a conference that's had several teams picked away from them here. And those were some of the best teams in the conference, and it's not surprising that, you know, they end up in a bigger conference. But I think this is still a conference that's pretty interesting because, you know, we've talked about before, too, this is one of those conferences, too, where you have the pace wars. You have some teams that really like to play slow and win with defense. Other teams who play really quickly try to outscore you in a high-scoring game. So I think that's what makes this conference interesting as well.
Well, one of the things to point out here is as we get deeper into the month of February and then obviously go on into March as well, my hope, along with my MLB season win totals, is to write up conference tournament previews for all these leagues, and we'll talk about them a lot here on the shows as well. So we try to hit all of them. I think last year we did actually hit all of them spread throughout the shows. So hopefully we'll be able to do that again this year, but we should be talking CAA a little bit here later on in the month. All right, we got a couple of other teams that we want to look at here. We like to sell a team high and buy a team low every week here on the show. What team are you looking to sell high this week?
I'm going to go with Nebraska here, and I think Tim Miles is a good coach, and he's getting a lot out of this team, but now they're 17-6 ATS. The interesting thing to me here is that Nebraska is going to switch roles. You know, they're really good as an underdog. They're a team I'd like to back grabbing points. They're going to be laying points most of the time now instead of catching points, you know. The bias that we get from how well they've played lately is certainly going to affect their lines. You know, they've won 5 of their last 6 games. They're going to be laying points in almost every game. I think they might be favored in every game the rest of the way. And if you're looking for a team that could be a little bit dangerous to back as a favorite, I think Nebraska is one of them. I think they're a quality team. And, you know, they're going to be a bubble team as far as the NCAA tournament. And they may make it based on the schedule the rest of the way. But Nebraska plays quite a few close games. And this is not a team that I'd look to, you know, be laying 7 or 8 points with. I'd rather be grabbing 5 or 6 points when they're playing a quality team because they have a lot of close games. They don't rebound well on defense. They give up a lot of second chance points. To me, Nebraska, you know, perception's pretty high of them right now, so I'd like to go against that.
And another thing here I think it's important to point out, and we kind of mentioned this at the top of the segment, is that you've got a lot of people now that are focusing on college basketball that really haven't been paying too much attention throughout the year. They're going to see Nebraska winning by 14 over Iowa, winning by 11 on the road at the Kohl Center against Wisconsin, and be really impressed with those two wins. But Iowa is 3-9 in Big Ten play. Wisconsin is 3-9 in Big Ten play. These are not the two programs that you often think about when you think about the Big Ten and Iowa and Wisconsin. They're usually significantly better than this. So while I don't want to throw cold water on, you know, everything Nebraska has done here so far, you have to realize that, you know, these teams don't stay status quo in college basketball. So if you're just showing up to the party now and you look at what Nebraska's done over the last two games, you're going to be more impressed than you should be if you haven't been paying that much attention this season. And there are going to be situations like that across the country, but this is a good one to point out here since we're talking about the Cornhuskers.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you look at a team like Wisconsin, I don't think anybody thought they'd be this bad this year. I remember when Ohio State beat Wisconsin back in, December, when they started the Big Ten games. And they beat them by 25 points at Wisconsin. And I watched that game, obviously, as a Buckeyes fan, was happy about the outcome. I could not believe what I was watching at the time. I just thought, you know, what's going on here? This is just a huge upset. You know, but then you get later in the season, you realize Ohio State was just a lot better than Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin's just not very good at all. I've watched several of their games here lately. They're just not very good. They have Ethan Happ and then a lot of guys that are struggling, a lot of young guys. I don't know if it's Greg Dard's fault. I think he might take a little bit more blame than he deserves right now. You know, I've read some articles about how Bo Ryan's recruiting classes in the last couple of years when he was there were just not very good. And I think that's showing itself right now. Like you said, yeah, I went Wisconsin both way down. And it's something that you need to look at as a better, you know, see how they've done so far this year. Don't just think about the name, because if you go just based on name, there are a lot of changes in college basketball from a year or two ago.
All right, we're looking to buy low on a team, and I really like this one. And as you mentioned here, this is a short-term look. Sometimes when we talk about these buy low and sell high teams, some of them are a little bit longer term. You know, as you mentioned, you don't really like laying points with Nebraska, who should be favored in their remaining games. So that's a little bit of a longer-term look here as conference play wraps up early for the Big Ten. Keep that in mind. I think the last regular season game for Nebraska I saw was February 25th. So Big Ten tournament going to be a little bit earlier here this year. But I really like this buy low team that you're looking at in the Mid-American Conference.
Yeah, it's Ball State. You know, they have a poor ATS record on the year. And more importantly to me, they're coming off a 41-point performance. They shot 26.6% from the floor. You always get overreactions, and I know you talk about it a lot here on the show. The NFL is the king of overreactions. You know, you have people react to what they just saw last week, especially at the beginning of the season, and you can get some good value off that. Same thing can happen in college football, certainly. College basketball, the same thing happens, and I think you're going to see people look at that score from the last game and see Ball State scored 41 points against Eastern Michigan, and it must be terrible. You know, that wasn't a great spot for them. They had played overtime against Kent State on January 23rd, double overtime win against Akron, and then beat Toledo at Toledo. And then last weekend, that's kind of a letdown spot there against Eastern Michigan, who's not as good as Toledo. And then they go in there and only score 41 points, shooting 26%. I think coming off a performance like that, first of all, you know, if you look at the long-term numbers, you take a team off a really, really low scoring performance and back them against the spread in the next game, you've done well in the long run. You know, there can be some nice bounce-back performances. I think this is a good spot for Ball State to get it right, especially because they have a couple home games here against Bowling Green and Kent State, and then a road game against Akron, and Akron is not very good. So you look at these next three games, you know, obviously it depends on what the price is on them. They're going to be favored in these games. I don't think they'll be a big favorite. The MAC's another league where, you know, Buffalo is better than everybody else, but then there's just a bunch of teams in the middle of the pack that's kind of hard to discern who's better than who. But I think Ball State's going to be favored in these next three games, but not by a large amount, and I'd like to back them.
That Ball State box score is absolutely fascinating. So they were 12 of 39 on two-point shots in this game, and they had 11 offensive rebounds, which is remarkably difficult to do. To shoot 30.8% on two-point shots while you're getting 11 offensive rebounds, Eastern Michigan turned the ball over 18 times in this game, and Ball State scored 41 points. It was a one-point game at halftime, 27-26. Then the wheels just kind of fell off in the second half. They only scored 15 points. But, yeah, I mean, that again, that's one of those things where, you know, look, not all losses are created equal. And for Ball State, as you mentioned, back-to-back overtime games, emotional road win over the best team in their division in Toledo. Toledo, who has a three-game lead over anybody else in the MAC West. Yeah, that's going to be a tough spot there, going to take on Eastern. And, you know, when you shoot, you know, historically bad in the second half of that game, that's what's going to happen. But, yeah, you know, box score study, a very important thing here for college basketball, you know, not just to do after the fact and sort of try to explain some things, but also looking at it from a first half to second half perspective. And I actually had a listener question about this. And, you know, once I saw that we were talking about Ball State, I figured it would be a pretty good time to do this in terms of, you know, not live betting necessarily, but looking at some of those second half derivatives, looking for some of the opportunities that are out there. You know, if you get some of these games, and I talked about this a little bit, you know, where I had Northeastern on the money line. They're playing William and Mary, and Northeastern shot like 75% in the first half. And I'm thinking, there's no way in hell that this continues. Well, of course it did. And I wound up costing myself, you know, a piece of the profit on the plus 125 money line. But, you know, that's one of those situations where if Ball State had had a first half like that, where they had 15 points and were just absolutely awful from the floor, maybe you look to make a second half play. And that's what you want to do. You want to look for regression to the mean, whether it's positive or negative. You know, as you're able to look at what happened in the first half, grab those second half lines, there's going to be a lot of good value there with that.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, you mentioned the spot about Northeastern game. You know, what you do in those spots, and you know this, is, you know, you look at that and you say, I don't think they can keep shooting that well. And you know there's some chance that they can keep shooting that well, but the odds are with you. And if you keep making that bet over and over again, you like your chances. So, you know, in spots like that where teams are just shooting so much better, or in spots where, like you say, if Ball State had been in the first half shooting like that, you would have to be interested in them in the second half. And also, this is one where it's a good point to point out that second half betting with totals can be really good to look at things like this as well. You know, you like to watch a game or look at it from a box score to see how fast the game's being played. You know, say you got a game between two teams who are usually really high scoring. Both of them shoot the ball really poorly in the first half. You're watching the game, you see them just going up and down, up and down. They're just barely missing shots, or maybe no fouls are being called or something like that. You look back at all their other games and you see, man, they've had some really high scoring games. You know, that second half total is going to be a little bit lower than it should be, you know, especially in a game that you know, those two teams are really consistent at something like that. And then the other way around, obviously the under can have some value if you have a really slow-paced game where they score just a ton of points in the first half because nobody can miss. You know, especially if those two teams aren't very good at shooting, you look for those anomalies that, like you say, you would hope that they would correct themselves in the second half, and they're not always going to, you know, you're going to get burnt several times and say, man, you know, I didn't think they could keep shooting that well, or I didn't think they could keep shooting that bad. And it's going to happen sometimes, but still, you know, you put yourself in that situation, you know, that's a good situation to be in the long run.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, there are a lot of angles that you can look at in some of these games. I think this is particularly relevant as we look at February as well, where, you know, we talk about this and we'll start talking about this more and more. It's not as prevalent this week, but over the next couple of weeks and then that last week of regular season play, you have some teams here in a lot of these leagues, especially the one bid leagues, where they know we have to play well for four games in a row. We have to win our conference tournament. That's how we get there. So if you're a team that's not playing very well, you're not maybe particularly worried about your seeding, if it's a conference where they take everybody to the tournament because not all conferences do that, you know, you may get some of these games where these teams just don't give much of a second half effort. So maybe you can play some second half unders. You can look to fade that team if they're down big at halftime. You know, then also if games are blowouts, you can play unders. If games are close, you're going to get those foul fests. You're going to have to account for that in your handicapping of both the side and the total. But if you get a game that's a blowout with a team that really doesn't have a whole lot to play for over the next few weeks, then you could certainly look at the under in those particular spots. So I think second half betting, if you're able to do it, if you know the wife is out with her friends, or maybe you're a single guy or a single girl, something like that, and you can find those opportunities by studying box scores, watching games, whatever the case may be, a lot of opportunity out there for you with second half plays if you, you know, are either playing on regression to the mean or just kind of looking at the game and the situation itself.
Yeah, I think second half under is what you just said right there. The second half under thing in blowout can really have some good value. You know, especially with a team who's good at slowing a game down late. You know, you take a team like a St. Mary's or something like that, a team that plays really slowly, Virginia, a team that plays really slowly, plays good defense. They're obviously going to run the clock late in the game. If there's not going to be fouling in that game, I think that number is going to be too high. I know the odds makers know that, you know, foul fests are more likely in a close game, but I still think that number on average is too high because you see the difference in those games at the end. It's truly amazing. If you don't watch enough college basketball, you know, there can be 30 points in the last minute 45 of a game. If it's a 7-point game, they just won't give up fouling. At the same time, you know, there could be 30 points in the last 9 or 10 minutes, or, you know, 20 points in the last 10 minutes of the game. That's a real blowout where it's just really sloppy at the end of the game. One team holding the ball, the other team not doing anything much at all either. So that, I think that's a really good angle to look for.
Well, and one final point here, and we'll look ahead to a few games, is that, you know, again, when it comes to second half plays, you're playing against an algorithm. You're not playing against, you know, the full scale market, because there aren't a ton of people that hop on these derivative plays. A lot of high volume handicappers will, and then you'll have some sharp guys, you know, and some groups out there that actively look to play in game and second half types of plays to gain those edges. That's because you're playing against an algorithm. You're playing against a formula of There's been X amount of points scored. The total for the game was X. Our second half total is going to be, you know, Y. And that's just the way it's set up. It's the way that it is. They don't take into account for second half lines, you know, what if a team's two bigs have three fouls each at halftime? You know, that's not accounted for. Or if a, you know, the point guard gets hurt with 3 minutes left in the first half, the second half line's not going to reflect that either. So if you've got the capability to do this, then there are a lot of opportunities that are out there for you. And again, because you're going up against a different type of market, you're not going up against everybody that's played into the market. You're not going up against the full game lines with the built-in recency bias and things of that sort. You're playing against formulas. You're playing against mathematics at that point, and you could definitely find some big second-half edges as a result.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that, you know, first and second-half betting both, I think that there's more value in that compared to full game. But it's hard for somebody like me, you know, because I have to play the full game. And, you know, I put so much time into this, researching the games and getting to my final card that, you know, it usually turns out for me that, you know, my time to spend with my family and you know, just get away from work a little bit is usually during the game. So I don't really get those second half opportunities very much. I do bet some first half, but I think if you're somebody who has the opportunity to follow along and look for second half value, I think there's tremendous amount of value there.
All right, let's look at some games here that are coming up this week, and I'm going to let you do this because I don't have the heart to do it. As we look ahead to February 6th, Kentucky takes on Tennessee, and you're going to do something for the first time here on Handicapping the Hardwood.
Yeah, this is new to Handicapping the Hardwood. I'm pretty sure we've never done this. And Rick Barnes deserves a little bit of credit for how he's done with this Tennessee team so far this year now. Don't get me wrong. I still don't trust this guy. I think that Tennessee is one of those teams that I'd look to fade in the big dance. But Tennessee's played well so far this year. You know, he's done a good job. Tennessee was not picked to be a good team this year. They're much better than they were supposed to be. It's interesting because Rick Barnes has done so little when he has so much talent. And it seems like this year he's doing a lot better job maximizing his talent. The emergence of Grant Williams as a star has really made a difference for this team. You know, so I think this is an interesting game for both teams because obviously Kentucky is not what we thought they would be. You know, Kentucky is certainly still capable of making a run in the tournament. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they did. But it surprises me quite a bit that Kentucky is not better than they are on defense. You know, I know that offensively they could have some issues this year. They're 54th in offensive efficiency. They're 21st in defensive efficiency. I certainly would have expected them to be a top 10 defense. The top 10 defense in this matchup is actually Tennessee. Tennessee's 6th in defensive efficiency in the country. You know, it's pretty amazing to me that a Rick Barnes-led team could be 17-5 at this point in the year, especially, you know, looking at they didn't seem to have that much talent. Maybe they were more talented than we thought they were, but we'll see what happens with Tennessee here the rest of the way. They play at Kentucky and out at Alabama this week. They then go to Georgia later this year. They play a relatively tough schedule here the rest of the way. So I think even though I am giving Rick Barnes some credit here, I think there's certainly a chance that Rick's team will fall apart here in the late going.
Yeah, I mean, that chance is certainly there, and he's certainly been a punching bag for us. But I'll be really curious to see what this number is, because Tennessee, over their last three games, they beat Iowa State on the road in that Big 12 SEC showdown by 23, beat LSU by 23, beat Ole Miss by 33. So they're out here just blowing teams away. They beat Kentucky 76-65 in the first game. They trailed at halftime of that game at home. They were down by 8, actually, wound up winning the game by 11. So Rick Barnes making some halftime adjustments. You know, maybe the old dog has changed his spots a little bit here in this one. But this is what will be interesting to see from a line standpoint, because you know, this is a team that played a lot of close games earlier on, had some games where they trailed at halftime, had some games they probably shouldn't have lost, like Auburn at home, Missouri on the road. But you know, now they're blowing teams out. So what do you think this number may come out at?
I think this one is probably about pick 'em. You know, maybe Kentucky's favored by a point just because they're Kentucky. But, you know, Kentucky hasn't been very good here, and Tennessee has been consistently good of late. So I really think pick 'em's a pretty good line on this one. I think it'll be really interesting, you know, how much credit does Kentucky get for their name and what they're capable of, and how much credit does Tennessee get for how they've been playing lately. I think it has to be really close to pick them. Let's see who's favored here.
All right, let's go all the way out to Saturday. And again, that's why this segment has some long-term shelf life to it, not just with the buy low and sell high teams and the breakdown of the CAA, but the games that we look at, you know, sometimes can be pretty far in advance here. And let's talk about St. Mary's and Gonzaga. Saturday night, St. Mary's knocked off Gonzaga 74-71 in the first game. They trailed by four at halftime, led their way to the upset victory there. In the second half, they have a game in between. That game on Thursday night against Loyola Marymount could be a little bit of a tricky spot for them. But what do you see from Saturday's game?
Well, you know, I think this is an interesting game because St. Mary's just might be the better team this year. They weren't expected to be better, but Jock Landale is a really good player on the inside, way better than most people realize. Certainly one of the best big guys in the country. Really talented. You know, he just has a lot of fundamentals that he does extremely well with footwork. You know, he can beat you with a mid-range shot. Really good touch. You know, I'm really impressed with him as I watch St. Mary's. Gonzaga is certainly down quite a bit from last year, and I don't think they expected to be without Zach Collins, the freshman from last year. I think they probably figured he'd still be around this year, and when he left after last season, that hurt them a lot. Their defense was first in defensive efficiency last year, and Collins was certainly a big reason of that. And this year, Gonzaga is 34th in defensive efficiency, so they really dropped off a lot there. St. Mary's, I mean, they have a really good home court advantage. This is a team that's excellent on offense, really, really efficient, takes care of the basketball extremely well. I think both of these coaches are really, really good coaches. Randy Bennett, Mark Few, a lot of respect for both of these guys. I really like these St. Mary's Gonzaga games. The atmosphere is always really good. My lean in this game would be the under. I think that this is going to be a number that's probably, you know, in the mid-140s, maybe even upper 140s. If it's pushing 150 here on this one, I got to look to take the under here because even though both these offenses are good, St. Mary's is going to slow this game down. They slowed the first game down at least somewhat. And, you know, 74-71, you have 62 possessions. So both of them shot the ball extremely well to get it to 74-71. I think the total may be even a little bit higher than that 145. I imagine I'll probably be in the 148, 149 range here. I would lean under that number. I think this is a really big game for both teams. You know, when you're Gonzaga and you're St. Mary's, you don't get that many opportunities to show what you're made of. You know, BYU is another good team in this conference. But really, the West Coast Conference is pretty down right now. You know, they have St. Mary's, Gonzaga, BYU, and then a pretty big drop-off. So, you know, these teams really need to get big wins for their seeding come NCAA tournament time. And, you know, I think this is going to be a really big game for both teams. I think because of the magnitude of the game, it's part of what makes me like the under as well.
St. Mary's in that first meeting, 8 of 13 from 3. They shot 56.6% from the floor overall. Gonzaga, 47.5. But they were only 6 for 22 from 3. There were only 13 turnovers in that first game, and we still only got to 145 with the total. So you know, I think you may be onto something there in terms of looking ahead to the under as possibly being a play. I'm guessing the last game that you sent me here, this one coming up on Wednesday night, George Washington hosts LaSalle. I presume this is the possible premium look ahead for you this week.
It is, yeah. You know, I will mention too, last week I had the possible premium look ahead and then a player got hurt. I ended up not playing it. A couple of my leans that were possible premium plays last week, I didn't play either one of them. So, you know, obviously if they lose a star guard or something like that or lose a key player, something changes a lot from when I talk about it. And it's something that is subject to change, and you can always reach out to me at Kyle Hunter Picks, and I'll let you know whether it did end up making my card or not. But the premium look ahead for this week, LaSalle and George Washington, I like the over in this one. I think we're going to get a pretty decent number, mid-130 range, 136, maybe 135, somewhere in that range. LaSalle's playing quick here. They're third quickest in the A-10 so far this year. Their defense isn't good. LaSalle obviously is healthier than they've been. This is a team that has several guys who can score. And I think LaSalle can score quite a bit on George Washington's defense. George Washington's been really bad on defense, 1.133 points per possession. And, this is a George Washington team that, to me, appears to be, already kind of throwing in the towel a little bit early. Adam talked about teams that, know they have to win four games in a row. This team looks like they're not, putting everything into these games here in the second half here of late. George Washington, what have they done lately? Also, they've certainly sped up by quite a bit. They were playing games in the 50s as far as possessions, 57, 59, 60, 61. And now here their last few games, 68 possessions, 67, 67, 68, 69, 69. I think when you look at recency, as far as efficiencies and tempo, this one points to an over. And I will say something I haven't really said too much on the show in the past. I think that, we talk about recency bias and how it can hurt you. I think that with totals in college basketball, if you look at tempo and recency when it comes to tempo and efficiencies, especially tempo, I think you can actually get an edge there. And that's one of the ways that I've done well in totals market in college basketball is you look at a team and try to find a change from what they had been playing earlier in the season. You look at a under-the-radar team that has picked up their pace or slowed down their pace. Having a little bit of a recency bias is actually a good thing in that time. So I think that from a total standpoint, looking for those tempo changes can really help you a lot. I think we have a tempo change here in George Washington, and we also have a LaSalle offense that's healthier than they have been, a team that I think could score quite a few points here.
And this is also a George Washington team. I mean, 2 years ago, they actually won the NIT, and then they lost Tyler Cavanaugh, who just ran out of eligibility. Last year, he had 18.3 points per game and over 8 boards per game. Well, he's not there anymore. So this was a team that early on in the season – maybe transitioning into being a little bit more of a jump shooting team, maybe trying to figure out how to run the offense without him. Those things take time. And, as we get deeper into the season here, maybe they're getting a little bit more of a feel for it. Maybe they are a team that does want to start to speed up the pace a little bit. And you're kind of seeing the effects of that with them giving up, 87 points last time out to Davidson, 75 to Duquesne, 87 to VCU. So they have given up some points here in bunches lately. But maybe they'll start to find some of those go-to guys on offense. And, those are things that you want to look for here late in the year. And also a team like George Washington, as I mentioned, 2 years ago winning the NIT, they're 2-8 in conference play. So, they're not going to be all that invested in playing some of these games late in the regular season and want to be that team that, goes into the conference tournament and comes up with the shocking, run to get into March Madness. But they're still going to go out there and take shots. They're still going to want to go out there and put up numbers. So you know where they're not going to play, the defensive end. So for those teams that, do seem like they're a little bit disinterested at this time of the year, offensively they should still be there, but defensively they're not going to.
I 100% agree with that. I think that the disinterested teams, you look to play the over, the teams who are really motivated here late in the season because of wanting to win the league title or something like that. Those are your potential unders and the disinterested matchups, especially if you can get one with both teams who are not interested. Good looks to the over.
Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Well, obviously college basketball is a big thing going on for me. It's been a really good college basketball season so far. Certainly happy with the results so far. I know I can't always do as well as I've been doing here lately, but I was going to put the work in and hopefully we can keep the season going well. 33-13 in my last 46 plays. This week my special is a month of all my totals plays from every sport for $250. You can contact me there if you're interested at Kyle Hunter Picks. Also, my free picks are now 65-32 in my last 97. I send those out by newsletter. Usually once a week. You can sign up for that newsletter at huntersportspicks.com.
Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, man.
Good stuff there with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Make sure you sign up for that newsletter, a very good publication that he sends out there. One thing I want to mention before I tell you about who's coming up here the rest of the week on Bang the Book Radio, Obviously, with Joe Everett there in the end of the NFL season, going to have an opening. I'm going to be bringing back the Monday mailbag segment. So if you've got questions, reach out on Twitter at Skating Tripods. If they're questions for me, if they're questions for the guests that we have on the show. And of course, if I get some good questions for that are directed towards me, I'll also ask them to my other guests, kind of crowdsource some opinions there with that. So again, bringing back the Monday mailbag segment at Skating Tripods on Twitter, at Bang the Book on Twitter, although at Skating Tripods, probably the easiest way to reach me. And then I'll answer your questions here on the show, and I'll answer pretty much every question that gets thrown my way, as long as it's not something ridiculous. 100 duck-sized horses versus one horse-sized duck. I could probably handicap that for you, but, ask away, and whatever you're curious about, I'll answer here on the show during that Monday mailbag segment, and then we'll still have Kyle Hunter with Handicapping the Hardwood every Monday. Coming up this week on our Tuesday edition of the show, we'll have Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio, and also Vegas Hockey Hotline, some interesting NHL spots to chat about with him. Also put a wrap on the Super Bowl with how things did with the sports books and all that type of stuff out there. We'll have another guest on tomorrow's show. Not exactly sure who that will be as of yet, but I'll make sure to bring that to you on Tuesday. Wednesday, Brian Leonard and Wes Reynolds. Thursday, Brad Powers, Rolf Michaels. Friday, we're going to have to come up with some new stuff here for our Friday shows. No more Brent, no more reason for the odds report. So we'll see what we come up with there for that Friday program. But again, I'll be hard at work throughout the week on baseball stuff over at bangthebook.com. So again, if your Monday mailbag questions are baseball related, well, that'd be pretty good and pretty time relevant there with that. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.